Good to see everybody here. Hey, just as everybody's grabbing their seats, these 101 sessions, we only run three a year, and they seek to be practical sessions, tools, tips, practical takeaways for business, those in business, if you're seeking to be in business. So, take notes. They're designed to be practical so you can walk out of here. Please ask questions. Our speakers will let you know whether they're willing to be interrupted or have some questions at the end. But really good to have you here. I'm not going to get in the way of our presenters. I'm going to give them as much time as possible. So what I'll do is I'll just read out a little bit of their bio so that you know a little bit of the background that they're coming from and their perspective. So first up, we're going to have Richard. So again, just for those who might not know the topic, our topic to this evening is buying and selling businesses and raising capital. So it covers off a number of people. You might be in the bucket of selling a business. You might be looking at buying one in the future and need to raise some capital. So we certainly hope it'll be of interest to you. So anyway, Richard has been with us at Life Church for nearly 25 years, I think. He tells me that his daughter, I think, was one of the first babies in the church. So that's his claim to fame. Studied accountancy at Auckland University, is a registered financial advisor, registered real estate salesperson, has over 25 years experience selling information technology contracts for IBM, Oracle and the like. 15 years experience consulting to hundreds of businesses on various aspects, helped set up local operations for an international organisation, bought and sold a hire business and is currently doing management and IT consulting, and is also an advisor with Tabak Business Sales. So plenty of experience to draw on for this topic. Likewise, we've got Andrew up second. Andrew's been with Life 17 years. He serves on our Business Life Investment Fund Advisory Board, which is our board looking to buy businesses to fund our community initiatives of raising $20 million for our community initiatives. So Andrew provides a significant input to that. Andrew's a chartered accountant for over 25 years, spent time working with KPMG and Arthur Anderson, financial controller for a transport group, and then ended up buying a printing business, and over 16 years grew that to a turnover of $9 million with 35 staff, and then sold that later to become a business broker, which he's doing now. So again, can we just welcome Richard to kick off the evening? Thanks.
Try and do this without the mic. Here we go. Can you hear me now? Good. Okay. So we're here to talk about buying and selling a business, right? So a lot of what we talk about, it doesn't matter whether you're buying or selling, the rules are basically the same. You're looking at the same things from a different angle. So, look, I'll just get straight into it because we've got a lot of material here to cover, and I got 20 minutes, and then Andrew's got 20 minutes. So if we can take the questions at the end, that would be useful for me anyway. So, look, the first thing, I guess, is when we look at a business, the first thing is that most buyers want to look at what the future, what we call the future maintainable earnings of that business might be. Right, because we all want to make money. We don't go into business because we want to lose it. And so typically what will happen is that business will get valued mostly by a broker. Sometimes accountants and other people get involved. And the futurable maintainable earnings is really based on looking at the financials for two or three years and just trying to work out how that business is going, looking at any areas where there might be large expenses or big revenues coming in and so on, and just trying to get a handle on where that business has gone, right? And what we try and do too then is do what we call normalize the profit. So if there's anything that's, you know, a bit crazy in there, like one time big bad debts due to someone not paying you or whatever, we normalize those to try and get some handle on the value. And that's what we call looking at the future with maintainable earnings or profit. But the other thing is that the other thing is that some buyers aren't just looking for just the profit. They may be actually looking for, if you're a seller, they may be looking at who your customers are. You know, if there's not a large pool of customers and they've got some, and what's the easiest way to get them, other customers, might be to buy somebody else's business. It might be that you've got some employees that a buyer wants. Technical people. Quite often people will buy a business to get hold of a whole stream of technical people. You might have IP. You might have plant. Or location is another thing that people will often look at a business and say, in fact, we were just talking about that just previously with one of the people here. Location being really important for the type of business that they want to start or buy and so on. So it's not just about the earnings. It can be other things as well. Of course, the seller normally wants to make as much money as he possibly can out of the business. And what we'll try and do, if I can get this technology working, is take you through a little bit about what a seller can do to try and make his business a little bit more valuable. So now I click the next slide. Did that work? Oh, okay, I'm already on the wrong one anyway. Hang on. Right. So we started on the wrong one to start with. So the first thing that we're going to talk about here is a seller needs to get what we basically say is get all your ducks in a row. Now, what do we mean by that? We're basically saying that there are a number of ways that you need to look at your business and see how just by working on your business rather than working in your business, you can make minor adjustments that could be low cost to you but significant value to your business. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But the reason why we want to do that is two reasons. One, we want to get as much money as we can for the business when we sell it. But the other thing is we want to make it really, really easy for the buyer to be able to look at your business and understand what it's all about. We lose deals for sellers mostly, well, two reasons. One, because the buyer just cannot get to the bottom of what's going on in the business. And the other reason, sometimes, the seller starts to realize when he's got a really good buyer, hey, this is pretty good business anyway, I want to keep it. So it's really important that we get that business looking good, getting your ducks in a row. The other thing about the sellers, if I can get this, I'm going to use my paper notes. The other thing about the sellers is, you've got to detach yourself emotionally from the business. You know, you've got to get to that point where you understand that the buyers don't care about the blood, sweat, and tears that you put in the business. The 20 years that you've been running this business at 60 hours a week, and it doesn't really matter what you think it's worth. It's only worth what the market thinks it's worth. And that market may only be one or two buyers. Could be 10, could be 15. But it's a very small number of buyers out there. So you've got to be realistic. And one of the big issues that we're fighting all the time is the seller's expectation that their business is worth a whole lot more than it really is. So one of the reasons why we're business brokers is we're trying to give people the professional advice in terms of how that business might be valued, how to get it to market, and what it's likely to be sold for. Yeah. So, I mean, what it's all about, getting your ducks in a row really is about good operational management and de-risking your business, right? The more you de-risk it, the more valuable it is, right? And think of it as insurance as well, because one of the reasons why we do these sessions is a lot of people, when they come to sell their business, are not selling it by design. And what we mean by that is they're not selling it when the business is at its best. They're not selling it when they want to sell it. That's selling it by design. Many, many times, they don't get sold for any other reasons than there's a death in the family or the proprietor dies, disease, there's health reasons, divorce, disability, disputes, and debt. You know, they've just got up to their eyeballs and the only way out is to sell the business. The buyers are looking for those businesses, They're not looking for the ones that are sold by design. A bit like real estate, really. Is this on a timer? Oh, is it me looking at you? Okay, next one. I forgot you had the timer. So what do we need to do to mitigate the risk? And this is really the meat, if you like, of what we're going to talk about today. Mitigating risk, I've called it mitigating risk. I'm thinking about the seller, but the buyer is also thinking about these things. The first thing is your personal goodwill. Personal goodwill is, if the seller walks out of the business, does the business walk with him too? Is he so involved in that business that if he goes, the next person coming in is going to have one heck of a time trying to get that business running smoothly? So what we're trying to teach here is that don't make yourself indispensable in the business. Find a way to delegate responsibilities. Find a way to make sure that, you know, you get... I mean, Pastor Paul's been talking about taking a day off during the week, you know. And that's what we teach when we talk about... when we're talking to people about their businesses. Find a way to take time out of your business to do that thinking, which is resting, thinking about your business and how you can pull yourself back and get, you know, because that's gold. Staff and contractors, have you got happy staff? Have they got good contracts? You know, if a staff member is a really important part of your team, how well have you got them handcuffed to your business? You can do that through allocation of shares, give them a long holiday or whatever, but to find a way to keep your staff happy and make sure you've got really good contracts, employment contracts with your staff. Accurate financials, that's obvious. Nobody wants to trawl through lots of financials when they're looking at a business to try and find out why there's a bad debt or why is this expense so high or whatever. So keep really good financials. And as Christians, we've got that responsibility anyway, so we should know that. Make sure that you keep your stock, your plant, your debtors all in good order. And a word about debtors is don't let debtors go 60, 90 days. Collect them, because that has an impact on your business and financing your business. Know your competition. You know, and think, when I'm going through this, think about if you're a buyer or if you're a seller, the implications of all of these, right? For instance, if you're a buyer and you can't see accurate financials, we've talked about that. If you're a buyer and the seller doesn't even know who their competition is that a good thing? I'm not so sure. And the other thing that we often think about or forget about is when sellers are looking to sell their business, we've got to remember the buyers are looking for opportunity. They're looking at the financial opportunity, but they're also looking at how they grow that business and so on. And it's not a bad thing for a seller to identify those opportunities and say, hey, look, you know, I think there's an opportunity here, there, but we just haven't done it. We haven't had time, or we've been focused on some other project. Okay, clear branding and marketing. I don't know about you, but I sometimes get onto the internet and look at some of the branding on there and think to myself, what's this company about? You know, so make sure that your branding and marketing, and it doesn't have to be complex, make it really, really simple. You know, we've talked about clear agreements, but we're not just talking about employment agreements, we're talking about supply agreements, client agreements. I was talking to a commercial cleaning business, really good business. Guy was doing really, really well. Asked him if he had any formal contracts in place with the guys that he was working with. Nah. And his response to me was, we do a really good job, right? If we don't, we're going to lose it anyway. Fair comment, but gold if he's actually got contracts in place, because that's what he's selling. Information technology, and this is my background's in technology, so I get a bit high on my horse about this one. Make sure you've got technology that's relevant and that you're using it. No point in pointing out that you've got a great, wonderful system that you're spending a whole lot of money on and it doesn't provide you any data or information that's relevant to your business. And make sure those intellectual properties, patents, copyrights, that they're all registered. Now think about it as a buyer. A buyer wants to know their register because that's what they're buying. And as a seller, that's the value that you have in your business. Okay, and what's the biggest issue of all is most business owners think their businesses are worth a whole lot more than they, you know, they really are. You know, so if you're going to try and get a good bundle of cash for your business, don't you owe it to yourself to do those other 12 things that we talked to before? Because chances are you're probably not going to get the money that you think you're going to get it for it anyway. So let's try and do the best we can there. So the next thing is make sure you've got a good team. Okay, not all accountants, solicitors, business brokers and bankers are the same. Make sure you know what your accountant is capable of. Accountants aren't necessarily the best people to value a business. The other important thing here too is to make sure if your accountant is valuing your business that you understand on what basis he's valuing the business. Is he basing it on the assets? Is he basing it including the accounts payable and the accounts receivable? Is he doing it on the earnings? Or has he got some sort of hybrid? And a business broker generally has access to information about what other businesses have been sold in recent times of a similar value, of a similar return on investment, which we can throw into the valuation. And that's quite important too, because the other thing to remember is that a lot of people, when they're going out buying businesses, they don't have a clue what sort of business they want to buy. All they know is they've got a bundle of cash here or got an idea of what they want to spend. They know what sort of hours they want to work, and they know what sort of income or return they want for that investment. So quite often when we're valuing, we're not necessarily valuing a like-for-like business. We'll often say, well, based on the turnover and the rental of two different industries, what sort of return are they going to get on that investment? So that's a bit of the work that the business broker can do for you. Obviously, the business bankers, and Andrew will talk a little bit more about that in a moment in terms of how you can finance the business. But be very careful. Make sure you've got a good team around you. Don't rely just on the business broker. Don't just rely on the accountant. Get them working together. So we've given you a bit of an idea now what you need to do in terms of getting your business to a point where you've got your ducks in a row. What is the buyer looking for? What is the seller looking for? You've got your team around you and so on. So what's the sales process? What's the buyer's process? Same thing, almost. The first thing that we do is we do an appraisal of your business. And basically what we do when we do appraisal, or a good appraisal of a business, they're based on some of the things I talked about before. They look at your financials, they'll look at what's going on in the market in general, they look at the pros and cons of your particular business. For instance, your financials may say that you're okay average, but you've really got a great location that's got some real potential. So we'll look at that because that's value. And some of those other things we talked about, they're value. We'll look at what's going on in the market in general, and we'll also look at how the market is conditioned in general. You know, are interest rates low? Are people thinking about getting out of housing, going into business, you know, all that sort of stuff. And we'll do a valuation based on that. It's quite a scientific approach, but it's also based on the experience of, you know, people like Andrew and I who've been doing business broking for a little while. Once we've got that appraisal done, and we normally give a band of where we think the value might be. And if you're happy with that, the next thing is to list it, which is just like a real estate listing document, but tuned for business. We'll prepare an information memorandum, which is basically a sales document. So you give us as much information as you like, that you can, good, bad, and ugly, and we will turn that into a wonderful sales document that makes your business look fantastic, within reason. Can't tell any lies, right? We'll do a marketing plan, and generally brokers like ourselves, we'll put it out to a database of pre-qualified buyers that have been in the market looking for different businesses, and we'll put it out to them first, and we get a really good success rate on that. And then we put across other channels, yeah? Buyers will be looking at the information memorandum under an NDA. So we won't give any of the sellers' information to anybody unless they sign an NDA, which is a non-disclosure agreement. And it's our job to make sure that we're not working with tire kickers, because you've got a business to run, and that's why you pay us to sell your business, right? We put together a conditional agreement, which has got a due diligence clause in it, which basically means that you're now really getting serious. You may want to make an offer, but you want to be able to satisfy yourself by systematically going through their business in detail to make sure you're 100% happy that if you're going to throw some money on the table, that you're getting what you that you're going to get what you pay for. Really important from a buyer's point of view. If there's one thing I could say to buyers, due diligence, due diligence, due diligence. Don't be forced into not doing everything you need to do to make sure that you're happy as a buyer. Once that's all done, then there's a bit of negotiation goes on. It might be you want the business owner to stay in the business for 3 months while there's a handover. It might be some vendor finance. There might be some other scheme of arrangement to put it all together, and negotiations, and then you go into an unconditional agreement, which basically says, unless there's some criminal or legal reason why not, that business is now yours. How long does it take to sell a business? Probably about as long as it takes to buy a business, possibly, yeah. Probably shorter to buy than it is to sell, to be honest. Our experience is about 6 months, but it can take a lot longer. And a lot of it, again, comes down to how well the business has been prepared to take it to the market and how realistic the seller is about the selling price. So doing that due diligence, and then there's a bit of time between the possession and settlement date where you might want to do a bit of the stock take and other things to finalise. But about 6 months on average. I've got one that I've had for a year, and you've had a few that's been longer than that, eh? Yeah. Click. So we talked a little bit about when you're looking to buy or sell, we also look at the current market position conditions, and I put this up because I think the market at the moment is quite buoyant, and these are not necessarily everybody's opinion, these are just my opinion. I think that a lot of people have got a lot of equity in property, and I think there's a lot of people starting to think, hey, do I want to buy the next rental property, or do I want to find a business that I can put under management, and so on. So I think there's a little bit more flexibility there, whereas Kiwis tend to be very driven by property investment, property investment, property investment. The government's trying to dampen that down. So I think there's a little bit of a move there. And seriously, I think some people are also saying, hey, I always wanted to buy a business, now I can, because I've got so much more equity in my home than I never had before, so I can leverage that. And they can leverage it because the interest rates are really low. So the cost of that money is quite a lot lower. So there's two good reasons. Diversification, we talked about that. A lot of people are buying businesses at the moment because we have one of the highest immigrations that we've had for, I don't know, decades. So people are coming into the country, qualified people. I've heard of doctors and architects and all sorts of people really well qualified. They can't get a job in New Zealand because they don't have the qualifications in New Zealand. But they're cashed up. They've got money in their pocket. Got to have a job, so they buy themselves a job. Globalization, jobs disappearing. I'm one of those. Right? Middle management disappearing. A lot of jobs going offshore. Spoke to a gentleman today, same thing. You know? So a lot of people looking to buy a job. Foreign policy, I think we all know that we've had a lot of overseas nations looking at New Zealand as a safe haven, so they're looking for tangible assets in some businesses, particularly their high-value plants and so on, tangible assets. And on the supply side, we're seeing, or I'm not sure if we're seeing it, but we're talking about it and hoping, I guess, because of the business that we're in, that there's a lot of baby boomers out there that are getting to that 60, 65-year-old, had enough, and kind of thinking that there might be quite a supply on the market in the next 5 to 10 years with new businesses. So good time to buy. Lots of business likely to come on the market, and so on. So that's what I really wanted to present today. I guess there's a summary there. Think of your business as always preparing it for sale. From day one, always be thinking about selling. Think about those D's, the reasons why you've got to sell. You want to sell by design, but 7 or 8, you know, 90% of the time it's one of the other D's, death, divorce. It's really common sense, good operational management, getting those things that we talked about in place. If you can make it more transferable, de-risking your business becomes really quite valuable. So I'll leave you with a little quote, because that's what we do. And that's a little bit about me and what I do, or try to do. So I'm going to hand over to Andrew. Andrew's going to fill in some of the gaps and also talk about financing. Cool. Do you want to do questions now or later? Do it at the end? Yeah, okay. Andrew.
Thanks, Richard. Okay, well, I'll, like Richard said, fill in the gaps and perhaps do it more from my experience. So I say that there's three stages that your business is always in. It's either growing, so it's on the way up. It's either selling, you're selling it, so it's on the way out, or you're doing nothing with it, which means it's on the way back. Going backwards, because usually your competitors aren't doing nothing. So if you're doing nothing, I'd be really worried. Now, business value, this Richard touched on it, but basically in a simplified version, we're taking the earnings that the business is making and we're applying a multiple to it. That's just a shorthand way of breaking everything down, the complex calculations down to a single number that most people quote. And what we're trying to do is the future maintainable earnings. So what earnings in the future is the business going to generate? And that's based on normalised earnings. So if there's one-offs, if, you know, we had one client that used to fly first class everywhere, you don't need that to run the business, so, you know, we adjust for that. A lot of New Zealand businesses have a lot of private expenditure going through their accounts. We adjust for that as well to come back to a normalised basis. And then, of course, you should always be taking in any capital requirements, so that's any working capital or even, you know, funding fixed assets or anything like that. So some industries are very capital intensive. I used to be in printing. And you spend a lot of money on equipment. And so if you're making lots of profits, you know most of that's probably going to turn around and end up back in equipment. So not a lot you can live on if it's in equipment. So when we talk about earnings or profits, everyone is thinking about a different number. And it's important to know which number you're talking about. So just as an example, are we talking about operating profit, which is usually the profit or the cash generated by the business? You know, are we talking net profit before or after tax? You know, companies on the share market, they will always quote profit after tax. Are we talking about a return to a working owner? And this is where all the lovely things come out about earnings before proprietors, interest, tax and depreciation. It's a big mouthful, which is why we shorten it. So, but are we talking about EBITD, which is the same as the operating profit, or are we talking about EBIT? So it's very easy to get caught up in getting the wrong, someone talking about what their business is earning, but you've got to actually know what they're basing it on, because it depends what you base it on as to what multiple you apply to it. So I thought I'd just go through some hurdles for selling your business. Now, the first one actually is, do you have a business to sell? Because a lot of people think they've got a business and all they've got's a job. Okay, so I personally define it that if all your business is paying you is your salary, and it's a normal market salary, then all you have is a job. You don't actually have a business to sell. So a lot of people come and see us and think they've got a great business. All they're doing is trying to sell a job. Another one, do you want to sell? We get a lot of people that come in and say, yep, want to sell. And then once you start talking to them, they actually don't. They think it's my baby, and do I really want to sell it? Some of them are ambivalent, they're not sure. And the worst thing to do is obviously be very uncertain. Another thing is, what are you going to do next? A lot of people actually come in and say, yeah, I'm going to sell. You ask them what they're going to do next, and a lot of them have no idea. They haven't worked out that their income's probably going to rapidly decline. And a lot of people live up to their incomes, of course, so they then go, oh, okay, well, then I won't sell. So, yeah, these are all the hurdles that you've got to get over. Accountants and lawyers, they're a hurdle in the sense that, seeing I'm an accountant and used to work in an accounting firm, I'm on the other side of the fence now. A lot of the time, they actually won't want you to sell your business because their fees disappear. So just keep that in mind. You know, they've got a personal reason for you to hang around. Timing, there's the right times to sell a business, and there's wrong times. If you can choose when to sell it, there's economic cycles. Some people are very tired. That's not the best time to sell a business, is when you're tired. So when you sum it all up, really, the biggest problem in selling a business is actually yourself. It's not financial, usually. It's yourself. People come up with excuses like, oh, no one will understand my business. It's my business. It's unique. There's no unique business out there. People think that theirs is so unique. I mean, I had a fish import business for sale. That's relatively unique. There's not too many of them around. But there again, that came down to its financials, and that's how it sold, based on that, not on its uniqueness. Reasons the business won't sell is because it's overpriced. Now, while we try and give a valuation to a client, it's always a recommendation. Some of them will try and go for more. But as we tell them, they always run the risk that it's overpriced. And what happens is no one ends up looking at the business because the wrong buyers are looking. Because if they look at it based on its economics, they will say, this business is too expensive, therefore we're out of here. Or the right buyers aren't looking. The guys that can afford it or should be looking at it aren't, because they can't afford the fact that it's overpriced. They might be able to afford $500,000, but they can't afford $600,000. So, due diligence and or critical business analysis, I characterise it by lifting the corner of the carpet and seeing what people have swept under there. That's the whole process of due diligence. And that's fairly big. It's a 2 or 3 week, or up to 4 week exercise. And yeah, it's like having someone rummage around your undies drawer. You don't usually like that too much because it's quite personal. Non-completion of terms and conditions. We had an instance where a colleague sold a business on a Friday night. It was all signed up on the Friday night. The guy went home, never woke up in the morning. And so the business couldn't sell because there were certain terms and conditions in there that required him to do some stuff which he no longer could do. So his wife and daughter ended up with the business, and they spent all the money on BMWs and body enhancements, and therefore, the business went bust. So, it's all stuff that you think, oh, won't happen or doesn't happen, you've got to be careful or mindful of that. So what can you do? Like I said before, work out whether you've got a business or a job. That's important. You don't want a business that's too easy, because then everyone can copy it. But you don't want it too hard either, because if it's too hard, people won't understand it. They won't understand how they can make money and how, and that's easier just for them to walk away and find something else. Systematise the business. This is where I say make sure it's not all about you. Because if people think the business is you, they're less likely to buy it. I just sold a business recently where it was very much like that. But the owner had gone out, spent some time putting together a manual, everything from operations, management, finance, was all documented, what they did, why they did what they did, the testing they'd done to prove what was working, particularly in marketing and that sort of stuff. So that was to prove that if he was run over by a bus, basically, anyone else could pick up the manual and know how to run the business. Get a good accountant and lawyer on board early, or get them on board early. Let them know what's happening. Usually they're brought in right at the end and it's a total surprise and they don't know anything about it, and that doesn't help. Get your ducks in line, that, like Richard was talking about. Just making sure the business is clean and tidy, even physically clean. Surprising what some people are working. Sell your business when you don't want to. If the business is going really well, if you think you can't sell it or shouldn't sell it because it's too good, that's the exact time to sell it. You've got to leave stuff on the table for the next person. If you're wanting every last dollar out of it, it's going to be hard. Buying a business. So a purchaser can sometimes look at it and think, oh, the vendor's got a great business here, but it's all them. They're too good. I couldn't do what they're doing. They've got a great personality, all of that. So you can't replicate it. You don't believe you've got the skills. So that's a hurdle. Paralysis by analysis. That's where some people get into a lot and a lot and a lot of detail. They tend to be accountants. And the problem with that, though, is that they never make a decision, because there's always new information coming to hand. So I always subscribe to the 70% rule. So if you've got about 70% of the information, that's all you need to make a decision. So decide to make a decision or to go ahead or don't. So that's associated with that. You can't or won't make a decision is a hurdle. Being too risk averse, I spell business R-I-S-K. Business is about risk, or the management of risk. Therefore, if you don't like risk, I'd suggest you don't buy a business. And therefore, sometimes people take a while to work that out. I mean, we have serial people looking at businesses. There's one couple of guys on our database that look at every business we put out and they never buy. They're in this category. And the obvious finance, funding, due diligence are hurdles, and then finding the ideal buyer. Because not everyone wants the last dollar out. They've been working with staff for a long time, so they want to make sure the new buyer looks after the staff or actually takes the business on from where they've managed to get it to. There's clearly there's buyers and then there's the ideal buyer, and obviously we're trying to find that ideal person. So I always say that, most people want the perfect business, but they never want to pay for it. You'll get a laundry list as long as your arm about what they want in a business, and it's all glowing in that. and then they go, oh, I want to pay this for it, which is a very, even below ordinary price usually. So usually there's a big gulf and it never works. Under the due diligence, what should be your focus? To me, there's two ways you can look at it. You can take a positive attitude and say, I want due diligence to, you know, in making assumptions, I want to check that those assumptions I've made are correct or are proven. Or you can take a more of a negative view and go, what's going to sort of trip me up? And I think it's good to have a little bit of both of those in there. Don't make it an overly negative process. So to some extent, you're trying to find out what's been swept under the corner of the carpet. When we get vendors in, we ask them this. We ask them, what have they swept under the corner of the carpet? Because it does come out. It will come out. And at least we can manage it if we know about it. If we don't know about it, there's only one thing that's going to happen to the price, and that's go downwards. Or essentially another way of saying it, what's going to bite you in the backside? So what's going to come up from behind you that you don't know, haven't anticipated? You know, by definition, you won't have seen it because it's coming up from behind you. So, and essentially, due diligence is risk minimisation. It's not the elimination of risk because, yeah, you can't eliminate it completely. But those are some of the areas that perhaps, you know, those would cover. So we got a colleague in the office who says this quite a bit. To buyers who are looking for the perfect business, it's actually the imperfect business, the one that needs a little bit of work, the one that's got room to move, that needs something happening that you can add value to. The perfect business technically will never get better because it's perfect already, and therefore the value isn't going to increase. So, you know, why do it to some extent? Now, I'll just finish off on capital raising, because I wear two hats. We raise capital as well as sell businesses. And so we talk about the three Fs, friends, fools, and family and fools. So typically people come and see us after they've gone to those three people and got as much money out of them as they can. And usually it's not, you know, it's for a startup type business or growth businesses. So I sort of liken it to teenagers. You know, we've all been teenagers, or we've had them as sons and daughters. And, you know, as is typical, you've got to make sure the fridge is full, because, you know, it gets open and closed fairly rapidly, and what was in there yesterday isn't in there today. And it's the same with the business. And that's what, you know, that's the whole thing of capital. It's having the fridge full enough so that when the company needs to draw on it, it's there and available. So it's very similar to growing pains, you know, that a child has. So the debt side of raising capital essentially focuses all around the security and the obligations. So typically it's a lender, typically it's a bank, who all they're worried about is getting their money back. And making sure that you're under obligation, you know, they've got you by the proverbials, to make sure that that's exactly what you're going to do, is pay it back. And then there's the equity, which is getting an investor on board or someone putting money into the business. They're all worried about ownership and control. How much ownership are they going to get? Who's going to control the business? How are we going to manage it? More as a partnership. So I just thought I'd quickly show a bit of a thing on the two differences between debt and equity. So typically with debt, you know, the term and the rate is known, you know, because it's in the documents. Percentage is to do with how much do you give away to the bank. Well, the bank doesn't want to be a business owner, so it's usually none, or in the worst cases, it's all, because they'll have security over everything, and therefore if it doesn't do well, they will end up owning it all. So their security typically is a GSA, General Security Agreement, over all the assets of the company. You might have to tip in other assets or put your house up. Banks love everything that's touchable. Yeah, they can touch it and feel it, bricks and mortar. Banks don't want to get involved in knowing how you run your business, although they usually do like putting restrictions on how much you personally take out. And then at the end of the day, they want their money back. So their exit strategy is get their money back. They might re-lend again. You might go to another bank or replace them that way. Whereas equity with an investor could be more event, how long you're going to stay in there may depend on a certain event happening, the business getting to a certain level or certain profitability, and that's when they will then exit. The rate of return is at best a best guess, probably, very hard to predict. Tends to be on future earnings and where the business is heading into the future. Percentage you end up giving away, most people, the less they give away, the better. They don't want to give too much away because it's their idea, it's that. So it's always a tension between how much they give away and how much they get in return. So it's managing that. There's very little security for an investor because they're actually backing the entrepreneur, or they're backing you. They're backing your idea. So it's a lot more personal. And this is one area where I think is a big benefit of investors, is they can bring a lot more than just their money to the table. They can bring their expertise, their experience, and all of that. So, and like everyone else, they want to know how they're going to get their money back, so how they're going to exit. So that tends to be a trade sale, or getting other investors back on with them to help grow it even further. So that's it. So question time now. So if you've got any questions, you can ask Richard or myself. And so come up, Richard, and we'll... So has anyone got any questions of either of us that they're burning to ask? Right. Perhaps I'll answer that first. We can look at forecasts. We don't go too far out. Typically, we'll only go a year out because after that, it's a best guess. And usually, we're halfway through or partway through the year, the forecast year anyway. But I think also what you're saying is more to do with the fact is, even if you don't want to sell your business now, be putting stuff in place now so that when someone wants to look at 3 years, they have done that. They haven't made a late decision to go, oops, I shouldn't do that anymore. So that's why it's about the design of, when you sell your business. You want to add anything?
Yeah, I think that's basically where it's at. I think, though, that one of the things you can do is if you look at that list of 12 things that we went through in terms of preparing your business, some of those things you can still do, and even if your financials aren't looking great, to try and immediately improve your business. So even though it may not reflect in the financials, you've proven to a prospective buyer that some of the reasons why those financials weren't particularly good, you've corrected. Bad debts is a one that, you can have a bad year with bad debts. Identify why the bad debt was there. Was it because another building company went bust, for instance? So make sure, and I think at the end of the day, when you're selling or buying a business, the more you know about your own business and the more you're open about it, the better chance that you've got of the buyer saying, okay, you've had about 3 bad years, but based on what you're telling me and some of the improvements that you made, I can see the opportunity. Because it's all about what's your opportunity and what's their opportunity. Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, basically what we do is, as I say, we look at the financials, we look at what's been sold in the market previously, and some industries and some sizes of businesses demand a bigger multiplier, particularly if there's more invested in the business, whether there's IP or plant or whatever in the business. Run-of-the-mill businesses where it's a service business, where it's very much you in the business, the multipliers on those are typically a lot less. Because it is service, it can go away tomorrow, and if you leave the business, you know, a lot of that might go with you as well. Something that's got a lot of investment in plants and so on might have a different, and some industries are different. I mean, manufacturing businesses tend to get quite good multipliers. Retail businesses, a lot of them struggle a little bit more. So, but I mean, Angie's probably got more experience in terms of a number of businesses that you sold.
Yeah, I think. And this harks back to what I said before, is when you quote multipliers, you've got to know what number, what earnings number you were quoting it against. So typically, very, very roughly, a normal business would sell at 3 to 4 times EBIT. So that's after the owner has taken their salary out or a manager's salary out. Now, you can't look at it as saying, okay, well, I'll come down to owner's surplus. So that's when the multiplier might be 2 to 2.5 times. But essentially, you'll get the same answer, because if you take the higher multiple on a lower number, being the EBIT, it's the same as taking a lower multiple on a higher number. It's just simple maths. So typically, it's also just a way of checking that what you've come up with actually makes sense as well. So, however, yeah, some businesses get high multipliers. Scaffolding companies, rental companies, anyone that's renting businesses, yeah, their multiples might be north of 4 up to 5 and stuff like that. So, there's a lot of factors that come into it, and that's why a lot of it depend on statistics that we get access to take the emotion out of it as well.
And I think the other thing too, we mentioned the difference between how I may be a broker will value a business and an accountant. And I had an experience just recently where I'd valued a business and the guy was really, really happy. He went on holiday, just happened to be on holiday with a whole bunch of people. And I think somewhere the line is he got involved with his accountant. And the accountant came back and said, actually, the business is worth twice as much. And I thought, really? Have I done something wrong? And basically what the accountant had done, and there's nothing wrong with this, it's just you've got to understand how the business was valued. He'd valued it including all of the assets, including accounts payable and accounts receivable, and the difference between those two, which actually put quite a lot more assets. It was basically a walk-in, walk-out scenario in terms of the business, where typically a business is sold more on the plant stock and the earnings of that business. So you've just got to be really careful. And when you talk about rental businesses or earth-moving companies who typically got huge amounts invested in plant, we may need to value that based on the notional value of the plant. Because even though it's depreciated and it's not worth a lot, its market value might be quite significant. So it may not have made a lot of money, but the assets themselves are worth quite a lot. So not normal. We normally do it on earnings-based. But sometimes we have to look at the nominal value of the plant or the assets.
In a business startup, so what would your view be sort of around overcapitalization and how to avoid it, or what to do so that eventually it doesn't happen? How do you avoid the business?
I'll let you answer that one.
That's difficult. I mean, startups, you tend to see the hockey stick. You know, it goes up like this and suddenly they're up Microsoft level in 3 years or something. That's typical, and we get very, very nervous when that happens because, you know, most people can't predict what they're going to be doing next week, let alone in 3 years' time. So we try to bring it back to some sort of rationality, and the problem is you haven't got a lot of numbers to go on. I mean, I don't know if people follow the guys that valued the likes of Invivo and stuff like that, they were up at 26 times multiples of EBIT based on 4 years, 5 years out. Just silly stuff, really, because it was just a punt. You know, they may as well have taken it next door to the casino and bet it there. So we try to bring it back to things that are actually going to add value. Typically marketing, getting the sales in the door. That's what a startup's got to prove, sales in the door. But then they've got a lot of fixed costs to generate that as well. So it's just managing that and making sure that what you're doing is actually, in the short term, going to add some value and some traction that investors can see that you're actually, you know, heading in the right direction. That's what they want to know. Josh? The market out there is about 7 to 8%. Whoever you go to, that's for a standard business. The bigger businesses, the fees tend to come down. But that's typical, and everyone bitches that it's twice as much as real estate. But we invest 6 months in trying to sell a business. I don't think your real estate agent would hang around for 6 months trying to sell your house for the percentage you're paying them now. So, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
All of those things that we went through on that list of 12. You know, look for those guys that they haven't got the business organised. You know, they haven't taken advantage of some of the opportunities that you can see in the business. They haven't got good contracts together with their suppliers and so on. I mean, those are all. That's why I went through and said, you know, think about this from a buyer's point of view. Think about it from a seller's point of view, because the buyer just wants to get the best price. Sorry, the seller wants to get the best price. The buyer wants to find the opportunity at the least price. So go through that list of 12. Anybody that wants that list, by the way, I can send it to you by email, but it's really important because it's both sides of the coin. Last one. Lucky last. Yeah, I mean, Andrew's probably better to answer that, but my view, whenever I've been looking to buy a business, because I got into this business because I was in corporate and wanted to get out and buy a business, and looked at a lot and was a bit dissatisfied, and then this opportunity came up, and it's great fun helping people. But my best advice, I guess, is what I've tried to do is get good people around you. Now, get that team, your accountants, your solicitors, your business mentors. You know, there's mentor businesses in here. Go along to the breakfast meeting. Bit of a plug. Go along to the breakfast meetings that they have and just talk to people. Get around people and talk about the business and talk about how do they do it. How do they raise finance? And how do they capitalize it? It's funny. I watched the Dragon's Den and Shark Attack, and I watched those guys that come in and they present to these guys who are wealthy and so on, and the wealthy guys, you know, they like the idea and they say, oh, I'll give you $200,000 for 30% of your business, and the guy wanted $200,000 for, you know, 5% of the business. And I can't believe the number of people standing up there and saying, no, we don't want to do that. And I think to myself, why? If I had one of those guys as my business mentor, you know, and I had to give a whole bunch more of my business away, I'd do it tomorrow, because it's so important to get good people around you.
I would just add to that, you've got to have a good business plan. So get it in writing, get it down, yeah, show what you're trying to do, because that's the first thing an investor will go to, is looking at what the plan is, how you're going to make your money, all of that. So get it in writing, get it critiqued, you know, through the mentors or whoever you use, you know, try and make it as robust as you can. Otherwise, it's just a good idea in your head, and yeah, it'll change every time you talk about it or something. So I would start there, and yeah, but that covers a huge area, because that's all your marketing, your sales, yeah, how much of the business you're going to give away, under what conditions, everything like that. So it's a very comprehensive document, and yeah, it doesn't take 5 minutes to put together.
Just on that, is that's why, you know, talk to your bankers and find out what they want to hear. You know, how many times do you take a business plan to a bank and they look at it and say, does this guy really know how to write a business plan? So get those people around you before you even start, because, you know, there's nothing worse than presenting to something to someone for an hour and they've got to sit through a whole lot of rubbish because you haven't really spoken to the right people before even going to them. That's us, I think.
Fantastic. That was really practical, really laden with experience. So can we join together and thank these guys for their presentation?